So let me begin by thanking the organizers for the opportunity to come here and participate in this wonderful workshop. It's a real pleasure to be here with so many of Bill's friends to honor him and his body of work. Really glad to be here. I am going to speak today about bioremediation in the context of this particular workshop. It's pattern formation in PDEs, and the model that I'm going to use is a simplified model for bioremediation in a porous media. The context that maybe you want to think about is the porous medium might be, for example, the ground underneath a gas station which has been closed, and the waste which is there is all of the petroleum products which have seeped into the ground, and now somebody wants to buy that site and put up a $30, $40, $50, $100 million building, but they can't do it because that's all ruined. And if you start digging around there, then you have to wait for a long time until you can put a building on. And so people have been thinking about, for example, remediating that by not disturbing the material. Other places where you see it is deep in the ground where wastes are not buried, but seep there, and it's not so easy to dig up 1,000 feet of dirt. So you want to try somehow to remediate it without disturbing the soil. I'm keenly aware that this is the talk right after lunch on the last afternoon of the workshop, so I have less than 10 transparencies. So I should begin by saying this is a joint work with a student of mine, Chengxing Chen, who has gone over to the evil side. He's in Silicon Valley now making tons of money, and he hardly ever calls me anymore. But I still like him because he did a good job here. So here's the simplified version of the problem. The old-fashioned pointer. Oh, thank you. Got it. So the simplified model is this. What you want to do is, here's the porous media with the waste. I mean, this is a blow up. This is a microscopic view of what's going on. There are these tiny particles, and there's little bits of waste around them, and you want to get that waste out. And the way you want to do it is by injecting bacteria in here, and after a while, the bacteria has flowed through, come out the other side, you've done something with the bacteria. And after it's flowed through, the bacteria have eaten all of the waste here, and there's this thin and very slowly moving reaction zone, and for chemical reasons, they cannot eat anymore in this region here after the reaction zone because there are too many bacteria, and they leave this in its initial state, and you want this front to move through here and eat everything up. Now, in real life, it's not bacteria which are being injected. In real life, there's some sort of a cocktail of what the bacteria need to eat. They're sitting there next to the oil. There are thousands of different kinds of bacteria just sitting in the ground waiting for action. But they can't eat the oil because they need some other stuff. So they devise this mixture of other nutrients, and they send that through, and that gets the bacteria going, and they eat things, and they move around, and things like that. But just so that there are fewer components to what we're going to discuss, we'll send bacteria through, pretending that all they need is the oil to eat. Okay? And what these people in industry observe is that when the concentrations are low, then, in fact, the bioremediation is good. But if they try to speed things up too much, then they find patches of things that haven't been remediated. And we propose for them a mechanism which could be bad. And then in this talk, what I'll try to do is to show you some very, very simple bifurcation and stability used on this model to give predictions and some qualitative warnings to the people in industry. So here's what we have been telling them. Suppose this front, which is now depicted here at some early time T1, for some reason, there's a rock in the ground, there's some different kinds of porosity, gets to have a little bump like this. But behind it, the bacteria have dissolved all of the things. Then it turns out that it's going to be easier for the bacteria to flow in here. To get to this point, it's easier for it to flow in here rather than to come around here, because it has to flow through a lot denser, whatever you wish. There are many mechanisms, but it's harder for it to get through here. Therefore, there's going to be a focusing. Because of the flow, it's going to focus more reactive material at the nose of this thing than down here at the legs. And as a result, as time evolves, you'll get some sort of a picture like this. On the other hand, there is the counter effect. As it's flowing by here, it's eating some of the things on the side, and there's diffusion also in this. So the diffusion raises the level of concentration, and as I said there, once it reaches some equilibrium level of concentration, for some reason or other, it doesn't want to eat anymore. So it could happen that by the time it gets here, it's already at the equilibrium concentration and therefore inactive. So there's a competition between the flow, which is the reaction, and diffusion. And in this particular case, diffusion is a stabilizing mechanism. So anybody who has looked at these kinds of problems, free boundary problems associated with solidification, diffusion turns out to be the destabilizing mechanism. Here it turns out to be a stabilizing mechanism. So this thing has been around for a while. I've been working with Peter Ortoleva, who is a geochemist at Indiana University, and there are many situations where this kind of a mechanism comes into play. This is just one of them. Here are some other examples. So this is what we're going to talk about today. But for example, spacing in uranium deposits. It turns out that what you're interested in is the shape of this reaction front. So here's uranium ore deposited kind of randomly throughout the ground. And oxidized water is coming through. And this is an oxidation front which dissolves this uranium. But everything which comes in behind it all of a sudden gets precipitated out just behind the front, because here it doesn't like to be in aqueous phase. It rather would be in solid phase. So it gets precipitated out here just behind where the protrusions are. So you would like to know what the shape of this front is, and then behind it you will find the spacing of these uranium things. So people find this one, and then by this kind of analysis find out where the next one is, and then they drill down and start to get it. Their own methods are quite a bit less sophisticated. But in any event, this is one place. And for example, here's a cartoon of breakout from some sort of a chemical repository or a nuclear repository. So the waste is in here at high temperature, and if it breaks out, then it goes in the porous medium, and behind the temperature is high, and therefore pressures are high, and you will see that high velocities tend to destabilize the situation, and so you can get this kind of fingering. This was associated with a project that we did for the Hanford site in Washington, in the state of Washington, and they didn't like this result, so we didn't get to work for them anymore. They wanted to see everything being nice, but we're happy that we told them what was really going on. Here's a calculation by Ortoleva's group, not quite in the situation that we're describing, but in some other situations. But this is typical of the kinds of patterns that you could find in this kind of a situation. So rather than seeing a planar front moving through here, you see that there can even be tip splitting of the nose. Here is a situation where the nose of the front grows and then stops at the expense of side things like this trying to grow, which then get dominated by the nose. And so you have this kind of budding occurring. So these of course, are advancing time constant concentrations, kind of halfway between sort of a reasonable concentration from the model that we're going to describe. And then if you take away some more symmetry, these buds can interact with the nose so that there's this kind of meandering, which you find, for example, in caves. Once you have the flow going through limestone, you get this thing started, then the flow keeps going that way, and you see this meandering of caves and limestone. So that's the kind of pattern formation that you see. Let me tell you now about the model. So here's the simplified mathematical model that I want to describe today. So C is going to be the concentration of bacteria in solution, the aqueous concentration. And M is the concentration of waste. I mean, this is solid waste attached. It doesn't move. It's attached to different places, and the bacteria are going to try to eat it away. And P is going to be the third variable here. It's the pressure, but really you should think of it as the velocity because it is connected to the velocity through Darcy's law, and these are typically constants, but in what we're going to do, it's important that they're actually variables, that they depend upon the concentration. So the top thing is the permeability. It sort of says how easy it is for fluid to get through, and kind of connected to the porosity, but for people who know, you can have the same porosity with different permeabilities. Like a block of iron with a hole in the center has a certain porosity, and it's different than having a block of sand. And mu is the viscosity, and it will also depend upon the concentration. So the first equation is a reaction diffusion equation, which is conservation of the bacteria, kind of the species, the aqueous species. There's two things here to notice. One is phi gets canceled out. Why? Because that's the porosity. It says what is the proportion of fluid space, but we're not allowing that to vary here. We're going to keep that fixed. We have other studies in which we allow that to vary, and in fact, that's important in some of the other applications, but in this one, I don't think it is. So it's just a constant there. It gets canceled out just so that I remind you that this is all happening in the pore space. This is the reaction term. It's the source of bacteria through the decrease in the amount of immobile mud or muck. And it depends, so the phi now got canceled out and got put downstairs here. And there's a constant here which says that the waste, as it goes to concentration, there's a factor which is important, and it's usually kind of large. This is conservation of fluid, and because the density of the fluid and the porosity stays fixed, that term is gone. So it's a nice divergence expression. And here is where all of the chemistry is. And if it was the real situation, there would be lots of chemical reactions. But I just put in a typical one, which kind of gives you an idea of everything that's going on. If there's no more muck, the reaction stops. If there are no bacteria, the reaction stops. If the bacteria reach its equilibrium concentration, there's no more reaction. So this is kind of the simplest reaction which does everything I just finished saying. Okay? So it's a couple of PDEs, and this is the Darcy law, and I've just reminded you again, permeability depends upon the concentration of the bacteria and the porosity, but we're not going to deal with that. And viscosity. So let's just call this ratio K of C. So it's these equations with Darcy's law put in here for the velocity. So pretty nonlinear things. Here? Oh, positive part. Never want to go above C equilibrium. Okay, we're going to consider two cases. And really, from a mathematical point of view, I want to consider K of C is an increasing function of C, and K of C is a decreasing function of C. What are some mechanisms for which those might be the case? Well, if you don't have too many bacteria, one possibility is that this bacteria senses these guys here and takes off in another direction, looking for more food. Another situation might be that when you have bacteria here, it's actually easier for this guy to slip through here because they cover they make biofilms, and if the biofilm is not too thick, then they slip by each other nice and easily, as opposed to trying to slip by the rock. So it's more or less saying something like that or all of those things together means that. On the other hand, they do produce biofilms, and sometimes the biofilms are thick and they fill up the pores. This is a serious problem. I mean, this is a wonderful, interesting thing. I mean, the fact that this guy can swim away or can make a biofilm is in some sense part of the reason why biological things are now different than just doing chemistry. I mean, these guys sort of talk to each other. They like to come together, exchange DNA. This might be part of the reason why they start to produce biofilms. But then there are probably energetic reasons that it's better to sit there and let all the nutrients flow by. So there's a lot of these things going on. But for us, it is simply some mechanisms like this. We consider the case when that happens, and we also consider the case when that happens. And these two cases will be completely different. This is the warning that we want to give. This will be the case where there aren't too many bacteria. This will be the case when there's lots of bacteria and destabilization occurs. Oh, yeah. Listen, there are groups in the Western United States that hundreds of people are just working on the biofilm. Other groups are working on what is the right chemicals, nutrients to put in. I mean, it's a huge, huge industry at this moment. And I've really done a disservice to all of those people by writing these equations on the board, but time is running out. Cunningham is the important name. And there's a book that came out from a workshop at the IMA 2000 on all of this stuff. Lots of good papers in there. Some guy named Chatham was the editor of it, if you want to find it quickly. So in summary, here are the equations. What we want to do is we want to look at the situation where the time is where the action is occurring. Namely, we want to look at the time scale at which the front is moving. So we do this change of variables, and there's this epsilon here, and you can see it's small because this is a porosity, this is the equilibrium concentration, but this is the density of the big fat guys, okay? So, and how much there is. So this is usually a small parameter, and you get these equations. And at the inlet, it just to tell you what all of these are, the concentration is a constant inlet value, and it's less than the new equilibrium concentration. All of the muck is gone. It has been dissolved out, whereas at the outlet, the concentration of bacteria is at its equilibrium. None of the muck has been dissolved out, and this just simply says velocity in, velocity out, because the fluid, it's got to go somewhere, so it goes out the other end. And it's an infinite thing. So in the x direction, it goes from minus infinity to plus infinity, and has a finite cross-section, like pi or pi over 2 in each direction. So those are the equations. And it turns out that there's a lot of nice little rigorous results that you can prove this about this, so that you have the confidence that you're working on a good problem. You can prove global existence of weak solutions, and if you give yourself a little boost, then this is enough to allow you to use Gronwell to prove the solutions are unique, but we can't prove that this added hypothesis. You make everything really smooth, solutions are the same, and there's a unique traveling wave solution for that set of equations, and the velocity before scaling, the velocity of this traveling front is this thing here. You notice this is epsilon. This is the epsilon here. So this front is moving with velocity kind of like epsilon, and that's why you have to make the change of time if you want to look to see what's going on there. You can also show that there are no other shaped traveling solutions, and that's due to the fact that you really want to have, realistically, you really want to have finite velocities at the inlet and the outlet. So the only one is a planar one moving. Yes. Yeah, this is the inlet. This is the inlet velocity. A little bit about how the the inlet concentration and the equilibrium, so the concentrations at the two ends occur. But fundamentally, that's what it is. And there's a unique wave. There's a unique speed for all of the constants. For all of the constants coming in here, there's a unique speed. It, by making the constants in the problem small, yes. But it's not like you have a lot of traveling waves with different velocities, and you got to go and find the one which is the stable one. This is what you got to work with. There are no others. Okay. Well, as usual for people here, you know that if you work with these PDEs, and you have this, and you want to do some sort of a stability analysis, you have to resort to numerics. I mean, this is about as far as you can go in this context. But as an applied mathematician, I got an epsilon. So I make it zero. And when you make it zero, everything collapses on a front, and then you can calculate. And then you can start giving the industrial folks some numbers saying, this is going to be stable, this isn't going to be stable. And moreover, watch out for this effect, because this effect you probably haven't thought of, because it's only now starting to be put into the codes of the people who are doing these huge programs for oil reservoir dynamics. I mean, Mary Wheeler in Austin is now starting to put this stuff into her codes. But before, it was this kind of reaction stuff never entered the codes, and this kind of fingering from this reaction infiltration instability was not part of the code. So you take epsilon going to zero, and then you can actually calculate explicitly what this traveling wave solution is, and it's exactly what you expect. Namely, all of the mud is gone near the inlet. It's still there afterwards. Afterwards, it's at the equilibrium concentration for bacteria, and there is a exponential drop off in the concentration profile, and that thing is just moving along. This question is open in higher dimensions, what this thing looks like. So what's this sharp interface limit look like? Well, there's a formal calculation to make it into a free boundary, which scares some people. But from our point of view, it is the easy one to do the actual calculations. Do the usual thing. There's an outer solution, which you expand in terms of epsilon to the half. And what you get on either side is diffusion equations over here to mimic all of this exponential decay. On this side, everything is constant. And the pressure satisfies the Laplace in here and almost satisfies the Laplace in here. But these are still nonlinear equations here. To find out how this interface moves, you do an inner expansion and then do matched asymptotics. And this is the appropriate thing. This is the sort of blow-up coordinate. You divide by epsilon to the half and do all of the matched asymptotics. And what you find is, as you expect, since it's a second-order PDE, the concentrations are going to be constant across, and the functions are going to be continuous across the interface. And it turns out that the pressures are also continuous, but since the concentration is 1 over here, its normal derivative is 0. So this is, in effect, the jump in the concentration with this diffusion sitting here. And what you find is then the normal velocity of this front is proportional to the jump in the normal derivative of the concentration. And that's how the front moves. So this is a nice free boundary problem. And if you've worked on it for a while, you see that this is kind of the reverse of the kind of free boundary problems which arise in solidification. Everything you expect to be true there, put a minus sign in front, and this is the one that you get here. So the planar solution which I got for you before is the planar solution of this. There are no others. There's no other shaped planar solution. And then you ask yourself, can you make that planar solution move through and eat up all of the bacteria, or does it lose stability? And that's where a little bit of stability analysis comes in. And I know you all know how to do that, so I just will summarize the results. So you do a little bit of perturbation like this, and of course what this means is I have already taken the sides to be either pi or pi over 2, I don't, but they've been normalized there. And I'm going to look at three examples, all of them having the diffusion coefficient equal to 1, and to see what the effect is of changing this thing which looks like the permeability or 1 over the viscosity. Okay? If I take both of these constants to be 1, the idea here is to find sigma by doing all of this linearization in terms of small deltas, plugging it into that equation, being very careful what you're doing on the free boundary, and then finally finding out what sigma is from the equation which gives you the motion of the front. And what you find is this dispersion relation. It says that sigma looks like this, and it is evidently negative no matter which wave number you use here, because this guy here is bigger than this guy here. This is the inlet velocity. So this is always negative, so it's stable. And so it says, if you don't have this opportunity of sort of having this feedback between the concentration of the bacteria and the transport variables, because K is in some sense related to the velocity and D is the diffusion, if there's none of that going on, everything is stable. So the planar front is stable. On the other hand, if you take K to look like this, of course, what I should have done maybe is take 1 plus A times C with A small and see what goes on. But it turns out this almost looks like 1 plus, but you can do more arithmetic here. Because you can do all of this kind of stuff once you get these linearizations. The sub 1s mean sub 1 here, sub 1 there. They're the coefficients of the linearized part here. You plug it in and you do a lots of transformations of variables, and for this what you get is well-known functions, well, Kummer functions, and you can deal with them, you have solutions, and what you find is that sigma, you plot it out, there's an expression for it, and it also looks like this, so it's always negative. So this is the case where there are not too many bacteria. Here's the case where it can plug up the pores. You do exactly the same kind of analysis, and what you find is this is the picture that you get for the dispersion relations. So there are modes in here which can become unstable. And, of course, since I took D equal to 1 and the transverse thing L equal to pi, the only thing that appears there is V, but this calculation shows that the bifurcation parameter here is the Peclet number. And so this is a dimensionless number, inlet velocity times the transverse, so it's kind of like the aspect ratio, but this is going to, so it's the transverse dimension divided by the diffusion. So if the velocity is high, that's bad because it moves all of the reactants faster to the nose, or if the width is large, it's easier to accommodate lots of different instabilities, but since the diffusion is on the bottom, the larger it gets, it's a stabilizing effect, just as I predicted. We also did it with these different with diffusions, which are dependent upon concentration, but the only way we could do that is numerically. So let me stop there and say that the warning paid off for the waste management company, and then they didn't do what we said. Can you guess what they did? They simply drilled more holes. But of course, drilling a 1,000-foot hole is a different story than. Thank you.